Hi, and welcome to Biting Into Healthcare with me, Dr. Miguel Stanley. Today's episode, how to be a better patient and get better service and treatment when visiting your healthcare provider. In this episode, I'll be discussing what makes a perfect patient and why your attitude from the very first phone call or email can affect the outcome of your treatment and even the final cost. Yes, being nice and polite actually can help you get better care. Why insurance companies many times don't help at the end of the day, and why your dentist needs to protect himself or themselves against toxic people. Find out if you are going about things in the right way when visiting your healthcare provider or dentist. So let's get into it. So, what makes a perfect patient? Does such a thing exist? And the reason why I wanted to talk about this is that over the holiday break, I spent some time looking into the concept of Japanese ikigai. And if you don't know what that is, it's a philosophy whereby you try and find a sense of oneness with everything that you do. It's actually quite fascinating. The Japanese have a lot of concepts like this, but this one is actually quite unique. And one day on my journeys, I was discussing with a colleague of mine, and basically what it means, it's the reason of being, your meaning of life, and how you can get satisfaction from something. And it's not just being financially motivated, but also motivated by love, by a sense of purpose, doing things that really bring you satisfaction. And dentistry has always had this connotation that, you know, I would say in the first world and in advanced clinics, you know, in well-respected clinics, that we're all a bunch of money-grabbing private caregivers. And, you know, depending where you are in the world and what your experience was as a dentist, you'll probably have a different narrative. And this is something I've always been quite fascinated on. And, you know, I think for me personally, my ikigai, my sense of meaning and of being is to not to have a clinic that has a high profit margin, but a clinic that has a reduced stress level, and not just for myself as the clinical director, but for my team, for everybody involved. I work daily with about 40 people here in my practice. I don't have multiple practices. I'm very much a wet-fingered surgeon, as you'd say. I spend a lot of my time in the chair with my patients, learning with them and interacting with them, and have done for 22 years. I've spent most of those 22 years honing my skills, learning, educating myself, sharing that information with my team, and curating my staff, my technology, the time, the management, focusing a lot on that, making sure patients get great service and great dentistry and great customer care. And every day is a learning experience. And I think one thing that I've always been doing is improving something. I mean, every single day we improve one or multiple things. And 2020 was a very important year for that, because, you know, it really threw a stick into the spokes of your bicycle, as to say that expression. You know, it was a challenging year, and we actually managed to overcome a lot of challenges in 2020 because we've been preparing our ikigai, let's say, for a very long time. Focusing on having a great experience and never focusing on volume and never focusing on quantity. And, you know, I see a lot of dentists, they're always like, you know, how many implants did you place this year, or how many crowns did you do? Or when American business people came in the past to try and see if they wanted to expand my business project, and they start looking at White Clinic's numbers and they're like, hey, man, this is not that profitable. Well, the way I see it, it can't just be about profit. It has to be about excellence first, and it has to be about quality. And, you know, I didn't study business, and no dentist in their formative years studies business. They study dentistry. They study caregiving. And they study materials and technology and diagnostics. And I guess we're constantly educating ourselves and traveling through our careers, trying to improve what it is to be a good caregiver. I mean, I'm completely different as a caregiver now in 2021 as I was 15, 20 years ago. And your focus changes. You know, there was a time in my career when I was very focused on making money. Thankfully for myself, my family and my patients, that changed a long time ago. And, I don't look left or right. I don't see what my competition is doing. I don't see what other people are doing. And I'm just focused on serving my community and getting through the day, without stress. And that's why I thought it'd be interesting to talk about patients. You know, we're the whole community of dentistry and all the lectures, we're always talking about how to be better dentists. But what about being a better patient? So I wanted to get into that today. And getting back to that concept of ikigai, you know, I can control my team, I can control my surroundings, I can control the hygiene, the technology, the workflow, the speed that we do things, but I cannot control the people that come asking for help or come for a checkup. I'd say over the last 20 years, it's fair to say, you know, tens of thousands, at least over 10,000 people I've come in contact with. And as a dentist, you invade these people's personal space. It's not like an architect or a lawyer or, I don't know, other professions where there's some level of social distancing, even before the COVID. You know, you'd stand at an arm's length interacting with people. You know, the most you'd do touching that person would be a handshake. But in our profession, we actually have to invade your personal space, you know, to get a good look inside your mouth. And I think that as humans, you know, not many people get to invade your personal space. You know, a loved one, when they lean in to give you a kiss, and it's usually for good reasons. So when a stranger invades your personal space, and I'm saying that, you know, if you're a patient, having a stranger dentist invade your personal space, I can understand why that can create some stress and some discomfort. That's why we wear masks and eyewear. And now, after COVID, of course, our personal protection equipment has gone through the roof. We look like we've got hazmat suits on and all of that, which is understandable. But we've been wearing facial masks and eyewear protection for a very, very long time, you know, for 20 years now. But what about the energy that we get from the patients? You know, I mean, let's face it. Some people just are not nice people, and just going to call it, just going to say it. I'm very, very lucky to work in a private practice, completely private, which means, you know, we don't have to treat everybody. There's no government or organized institutions telling me that we have to provide care to people coming to us. So we are legally and ethically bound by a specific set of rules. And one of them is we do not have to provide care to everybody coming to us here at the clinic. Not everybody can say that. You know, you've got some people on, like, for example, the NHS in the UK or in Holland, or I don't know all of the statistics, but, you know, where you have to provide care to everybody that comes to you. But it's really a messy thing, because as a doctor, you're trained to look at everybody from a biological perspective, you know, but as a human, are we supposed to like everybody? No, we don't, you know. Just look at marriage. You know, you don't marry the first person you see. You go on a few dates, and only at the very end, if you really, really like that person, do you create a lifelong relationship with them. Well, I think that being a dentist, you create a lifelong relationship with somebody. You're invading their personal space. You're interacting with their biology, with their mechanics, with their aesthetics, with their emotions, with their financials, with their time, with their schedule. And if you do a good job, you'll succeed and you create a good relationship. And I have great relationships with some of my patients. But if you don't, I mean, these things can really be a headache for us. And this isn't just for dentists. This is for any healthcare provider, even a hairdresser, a masseuse, physiotherapist, any caregiver at any level. I don't think there's anyone out there that can say that they absolutely love all of their patients or clients. Let's face it, just for whatever reason, some people may be going through a divorce, or they've got their own personal battles, or they're suffering with mental illness, or, they're broke, or they don't have money. We'll get into that a lot throughout this conversation, because I think that's one of the major reasons for issues at the dentist. But some people just, they're not nice. Their energy's off. And quite frankly, I don't feel that I want to give all of my love and attention and kindness and efforts to these kind of people. So the topic, how to be a better patient and get better service and treatment, is for you, the consumer of healthcare. And maybe, look, you're not going to like what I'm going to be talking about today, but perhaps if you pay attention to some of these little guidelines, you might actually get better pricing, better diagnostics, and at the end of the day, better treatment. And if that's something that's important to you, and I think it should be, then you might want to be paying attention to this conversation. So let's talk about this. So let's break it down to the very essence of the kind of patients that can come to us. So you got male, female, or other. We live in an era now where you've got your non-binaries and your transgenders, and I respect that. We have transgender patients here at the clinic. Everybody's welcome. Then you can have young, old. You could have wealthy or poor. And I think this is a huge issue when seeking dentistry, because in most countries around the world, it's a privately managed or privately run. So these things can be quite expensive and really put a huge burden on the family accounts. It's very difficult, but the same, it happens with travel or housing or grocery shopping. If you have funds in your bank account, liquidity, decision-making process is a lot easier than if you don't. But most people are very, are not very comfortable disclosing their finances. And then you've got, people that are highly educated or that are illiterate. You've got people that are highly intelligent or that can't process information properly. You've got people that have never been to the dentist. I once had a patient who was 60, never had been to the dentist. And guess what? No cavities and no gum issues. There's a lot of reasons why. But so I call those the dental virgins versus people with lots of dental care. You've got people that are mentally stable or people with a lot of mental health issues. I mean, let's talk about that a little bit. Somebody who's, just a chilled, relaxed, comfortable human being, comfortable in their own skin, versus somebody who's, bipolar and going through their down spiral and just happens to come to the dentist when they're peaking in their negative phase. I mean, it's very, very difficult. How can we be prepared for that? How can we know? Somebody who's bipolar or, a paranoid schizophrenic that's undiagnosed or misdiagnosed and rocks up to have a complex treatment done, and the week before you've spoken to this person, everything's fine, and all of a sudden they're having a manic phase. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but, I've been doing this long enough to understand that some people's reactions to complications is just crazy. Somebody who lives close by, somebody who lives far away, makes a huge impact. Why? Because if you're treating somebody that lives in the neighborhood and you have a complication, it's easy to solve. I'll just come in and we'll fix it, versus somebody that travels. I have many patients that get on a plane to come for care. And when you have a problem, it's a lot more stressful to manage. Distance is important, because a lot of people don't mind traveling for quality care, but then they do mind traveling when something goes wrong. And I think that it's important that these things are addressed. Patients that have lots of time, so somebody who's wealthy and unemployed, doesn't need to work and that's retired and has loads of time on their hands, usually likes to talk a lot more and can take extra time and, you know, is a lot more, I don't know, more engaging, let's say, or a CEO of a Fortune 500 company who's, you know, got the same issue but has no spare time, is always on the rush. The second they sit down, they're pulling out their, you know, smartphones and working, and it makes it very, very difficult. Somebody who's very healthy versus somebody who's not that healthy. So, for example, you got a 25-year-old athlete who's at the prime of his health versus somebody who's got Parkinson's. And you could have exactly the same procedure on patient A and patient B, yet, and where, you know, the stress levels of one and the other are completely different. And you've got some people that are just easy people, stress-free, or somebody who's just difficult. Why? Because they're going through challenges. And I have phases in my life when I'm more difficult than others. You know, when I'm more stressed, I just don't have time to process information. And when I'm very busy, I wouldn't say I'm a difficult person, but I guess I can be. Some people are just difficult. Why? Because they hate going to the dentist because they've got all the phobias going on. But again, some people are easy, some people are difficult. Then you've got people that are just extremely polite, and people that are just rude. Upbringing, education, moral values, ethical code, moral compass. We know that this is something that is being corroded in modern society, and just some people are just rude and some people are polite. People with insurance or people without insurance. I mean, for me, that's pretty easy. I've never worked with any insurance companies. I find that they're not really here to help. They see, we'll get into that later, but insurance company doesn't understand any of these things. They don't see the difference between a healthy person or a sick person in dental care, or a person that's got, you know, that's mentally stable or that's highly unstable, or somebody that opens their mouth well or doesn't open their mouth well. Again, that's another thing. Patients come to us, some can open their mouth really well and others can't. And the exact same intervention in one and the other is completely different. You've also got calm people, nervous people, just people that are high strung. Some of them take medication, some don't take medication. But why should I not be able to discuss? I'm not really comfortable with people that are very nervous, you know, and you've got them. You've got people that just, it's very, very stressful for somebody that's, so hopefully we can calm them down before we work with or without medication. But I don't like treating people that are nervous, and I've actually called off many interventions just because, you know, until that person gets their nerves in order, I'm not willing to start treatment. People that are hygienic or people that are dirty. We have patients that literally come to the appointment. They're covered in dandruff. Their personal hygiene's a mess. I'm not just talking about their oral hygiene. I'm literally, you know, they stink. And I'm like, we get complaints from you know, in the waiting room. Some people just don't know it. Maybe they live by themselves. They don't have somebody that can call them out on this. And it makes things difficult. You've got so many different variations of all of this equation. So, for example, a old male versus a young female has its implicit challenges. But then if you add opens the mouth well, doesn't open the mouth well, polite versus rude, healthy and sick, lots of time, no free time, lives close by, lives far away, mentally stable, highly unstable, a dental virgin with lots of old treatments, highly intelligent, not that intelligent, poor or rich, all of these amalgamations create a very beautiful tapestry, but sometimes a very complicated tapestry. And are we properly prepared for this? I don't think so. This is a very hidden topic that nobody really likes to talk about when coming to the dentist. And the truth is, every single dental clinic is doing its best to promote their services and their you know, their treatment offerings, and trying to make sure that when patients come to us, we can give them a really good journey, a really good treatment at the clinic. But how, you know, we live in a world of political correctness. I mean, I've never felt comfortable to telling somebody just straight to their face, look, I don't like you. I'm not going to give you any treatment. But I've definitely had more than enough reasons to do that over the course of my career. So how can we avoid having nasty people come to our clinic that we have to then, you know, engage with and treat? So I think it's a really interesting discussion. I think that it really should be had, because as private practitioners, you know, we have to build our own clinics. We have to buy our own technologies. We have to, you know, there's no support from government. There's no support from any organizations, institutions. We're small business owners. And yet, you know, much like a restaurant, if you've got a customer that comes in drunk and disorderly and smoking and just, you know, rude to the staff, you wouldn't think twice about having a manager, you know, kick that person out and saying, listen, you know, you're scaring off the other, you know, clients, and I'm going to have to eject you from the restaurant. Why, you know, is that happening in healthcare? So I don't want to, I don't want to deviate too much from the topic, because I just wanted to set the grounds for the discussion. That your character, your attitude, your difficulties, your challenges, I mean, some you can control and some you can't control, but all of that really does change the kind of care that you're given, period. There's no discussion. And I'm sure any dentist or any healthcare provider out there will agree with me on that. So how can, I'm going to break this discussion up into two different areas. One is from a caregiver provider. So if you are in the healthcare industry, how you can filter this. And then by default, you as a patient, and let's face it, you know, I have to be a patient sometimes. I go do my checkup at a hospital and or with a doctor, or I go get my hair cut. And I also have to be a patient in my own dental clinic. So what I'm trying to say is that you learn these little hacks, these little tricks, and if you are polite from the very get-go and very patient and just kind, you actually get better service. So let's get into it, and let's start from the way that I think that we can avoid having some issues at the front desk. Here's a, just before we get into it, you know, as dentists, the kind of things that people come for, you know, from a random checkup, emergency pain therapy, cosmetic work, orthodontics, missing teeth, accidents, second opinions, bad breath, implants, dental bleaching, cosmetics. I mean, the amount of things that we can do as dentists is quite extraordinary. I mean, it's as if a GP could do brain surgery and also clip your nails in the same appointment, and do a, you know, liposuction and a full checkup. Dentists are very comprehensive in the scope of action. Yet we know less about our patients, and this is mutual, than we do about an Uber driver. So if you catch, you know, We know less about the patients coming in through the door than we do about our Uber driver that took us to work, because in the, we can see on the app how many, you know, we can see comments on that driver, what's his rating, etc. But we don't have that in healthcare. I'm not saying we should. I'm just saying we don't have that. And by default, you know, patients, if a dentist has got a good website or a Google rating, you know, I have a Google rating. It's quite a good one. The clinic I work in has a good Google rating. And, but you know, most clinicians will have a website, will have that, but we don't do background checks on our patients. How are we to know if this person is a, you know, a criminal or has a criminal record or owes money to other people and is a really difficult patient or is hiding massive healthcare issues from us. It's kind of scary, you know. And so here we are, open for business to total strangers that are coming looking for the services we provide. And we have to be pretty brave just accepting everybody, right? So how can we filter that a little bit? Should we be filtering it? I personally think we should, because just at the end of the day, let's not forget that dentistry is one of the highest suicide rates, one of the highest professional suicide rates of any profession, according to many studies. Mental health is a huge issue in dentistry. I mean, huge from a professional perspective. I mean, it's one of the most stressful professions in the world. A, because of the scope of action that we can do, from a simple filling to extractions and surgery and cosmetics, and that's a whole other podcast. But I think a lot of it has to do with the misrepresentation of who comes to us and not really understanding that. And that's one of the foundations and the reason I created Slow Dentistry, is that first appointment is very, very important. And I see too many dentists thinking that first appointment is there to sell something. Here's what I have to sell to you. I'm really good. I'm fantastic. I'm amazing. Here's an amazing fee. Here's an amazing price. Yeah, it's going to be great. Everything's going to be incredible. And of course, the patient's going to buy it, right? But what if you're letting a psychopath into your clinic? You know, if you think about your team as your family, you're letting a psychopath into your family. I mean, you don't know. Maybe it's the nicest person in the world. And I've been blessed to have had a really good radar when it comes to that, you know. And I have many times chosen not to pursue treatment with many patients. For a multitude of reasons, being rude, I would say, is one of them. Not being able to afford care is probably the primary one. Not wanting to do what you should be doing, you know. So people that will choose to bleach their teeth over getting healthcare, you know, treating cavities or fillings or something like that. Not listening to what I want to do as a doctor, but more focused on aesthetics. I refuse care to those patients. But I see a growing trend, mostly because there's a lot of young dentists on the market today that have spent a lot of money setting up their clinics and trying to get into business and trying to be financially successful. So here they are, overreaching and trying, making sure that they can not lose anybody, and promising everything to their patients and not thinking about these variations of human nature that can sometimes cause a lot of stress down the line. So hopefully this topic of how to be a better patient and get better service and treatment can also help colleagues and healthcare providers also think a little smarter about who they let into their practices, because unwanted patients can cost thousands of dollars a year. You know, if once you let them in and something goes wrong, it really can be quite stressful. And at the end of the day, you know, there's no police in dentistry. There's nobody policing your work. And if you make a commitment to somebody saying, yeah, I can do that, yeah, of course I'm going to do that, and you oversell something to a person who's just not an ethical person or a nice person, who's a combative person, or a person that, uses lawyers as a resource to win arguments, you know, it really can create a lot of stress. And I know, for one, in the UK, there's a lot of issues with that. The General Dental Council, of which I'm an active member, is met every single day with the lawsuits from patients against dentists. I just think we have to also understand, you know, the public can measure what is a good healthcare provider, but we should also be able to measure what is a good patient. You know, here we are investing a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of resources in making sure that we can take care of you. But I don't think that everybody should be allowed in, you know. So here's a few things that we believe that is an indicator of a complicated patient, all right? Or I believe is an indicator. So these are rough statistics, but I would say in the last 15 years, patients that call the clinic, 80% straight up call the clinic and say, I'd like to book an appointment. It's pretty straightforward. 3-4 minute conversation at the front desk. They'll ask the fee of the first appointment. They'll choose a date and they'll schedule that appointment. And, you know, very simple, you know, very basic questions, but mostly they've done their research, they've done their homework, they've been recommended or they've seen the website or whatever, and they call to book an appointment and they show up for their appointment, they pay for their appointment, and that first appointment goes smoothly. However, about 20% of people feel that they want more information before they come in for that first appointment. Now, again, depending on your age, your demographic, let's just use that word demographic, because I don't want to be politically incorrect. But so some people will want a lot more information. They'll want to know prices of specific treatments. And I'd say it's mostly about pricing. So this is where the finances really make a huge difference. So usually people that have financial liquidity won't be asking these kind of questions, usually. But a lot of people, so they're given the price of a first appointment. And for me, the first appointment is not about selling something. It's about two people, a doctor, a caregiver, and a patient meeting in a clinical setting. And that will, under, you know, confidentiality, discuss what needs to happen. And in my case, we use a CT scan, a CBCT. We'll do a clinical checkup, a full understanding of the patient's medical history, clinical history. We'll sit and we'll listen to people. And sometimes we'll spend 2 hours talking with this person, taking x-rays, and just a bunch of other professionals on my team will come in and we'll have a really comprehensive checkup. And once that we've come to an agreement of what should be done, then we'll sit and we'll figure out how much that is going to cost. And yes, if a patient has a limited aperture of their mouth, if they can't open their mouth properly, I'm going to have to spend more hours doing my treatment. And so the treatment will be more expensive. And it's of no fault of the patient's. But if a patient has a limited opening of their mouth, I am going to have to spend more time. Imagine I'm taking out a complex wisdom tooth on a patient that can't open their mouth properly. I'll do the surgery, but I know for a fact that it's going to take me twice as long, and chair time needs to be paid, much like a lawyer. Lawyers charge by the hour, and I think that it's only fair that we do too. And patients that don't want to understand this, well, then we just won't pursue treatment with them. Why should I have to suffer because you have a medical condition? So, you know, we have to be fair and equitable in these things. So that's why it's very difficult to give out pricings over the phone, because the price of an extraction or an implant or of a filling can be impacted simply by if you open your mouth well or not. People that are very nervous, again, take a little bit more time. Time has to be compensated, because I think a lot of patients make the mistake that they're buying a product. You know, here, I want a filling. How much is a filling? And that product has to be built into your mouth. That means it's also a service, and attached to a service is time and human resources and materials. And so it's multifactorial. And the better a clinician you are, the more that variable changes. So I always find it very challenging, and my front desk always finds it very challenging when patients just call up and they say, yeah, I want to know the price of this or the price of that. And, you know, they're barred from giving out any costs, because unfortunately, unlike those programs you have or those websites you have that sell a car, you know, I went on Tesla's website recently. It's amazing. Just curious. I'd never been on their website, and it's just amazing. It's amazing. It's, you can adapt your car and the color and the wheels and the tires and everything, and you can see the price change as you add things. I mean, wouldn't that be awesome if you could do that in healthcare? I mean, I think it would be incredible. But we're not there yet. Artificial intelligence one day might solve that problem, and I'll be interviewing some leaders in AI on this podcast in the future, for sure. I think that one day that will happen. But for now, it's still a very tailor-made and customized procedure. So, yeah, patients that are very insistent on asking prices over the phone, usually that's a red flag, all right? So if you really want service or want care from a specific doctor, by the way, do your homework and research on your doctors. Most doctors have published work or written books or give lectures, and, you know, maybe they haven't. But doctors that have usually like to know that their patients have done some research on them. So do your homework, all right? Usually that's seen very favorable. You know, if a patient comes to me and says, oh, I've listened to your podcast, or I've listened to some of your videos on YouTube, and I've read everything there is about you online, that usually is people, you know, anybody loves to be flattered. So I think that's is something that's quite interesting as well that you should look into. But people that just want to know the cost of your treatments, for me, that's a definite no-no. So if you are curious about pricing, then just invest in the first appointment. Go to the clinic. You know, worst case scenario, you get a checkup, a diagnostic, and a treatment plan for the price of that first appointment, you know. And if you don't want to pay for that, you know, if you're going to pay for the doctor's time, then why do you think he will want to treat you in the first place? So that's the way we see this. There are a lot of dentists and caregivers that are happy to give up pricing. Why? Because they're desperate for clients. But by the same coin, unless they're starting up a new clinic, I mean, but if this clinic's been on the market for a long time and is doing that, then it's the same thing as an empty restaurant, you know. Nobody likes to go to a restaurant that's empty, because you're always like, there must be something wrong there. Of course, there are exceptions to the rule, but, you know, if you've been on the market for quite a long time, you're a successful clinic or a successful doctor, you'll probably find it challenging to get pricing out of them. At least that's my experience. Also, emailing long emails with your entire medical history and photographs and x-rays, you know, we get these long emails from patients, you know, dear Dr. Stanley, here's my medical files from, you know, the day I was born till today, my last 57 x-rays, and I live here, and I have these issues. And, you know, it's like just reading that email is going to take like 2 hours, answering it 2 hours. And the second you answer, then, oh, he replied to me. Now we're talking about somebody who's got a lot of spare time on their hands, nothing else to do. And, you know, you want to be polite to these people, and you want to be kind to these people, and you want to help these people, because that's the implicit ethos of a doctor, is to, you know, be a caregiver. But now they start taking up very precious time that is very valuable. So again, we're now instructing on our website and on emails, automated emails, just, you know, we will not open files. We will not read these files, because the way I see it, you're not a patient until you've accepted treatment and actually, you know, started that treatment. And that's been mutually agreed upon after signed valid consent. Until then, you're just a citizen, an individual, a person, visiting the clinic, you know, to check me out, to check my team out, to see if you like us. But we're also doing the same with you, because given that first discussion, you know, if you're rude and impolite and don't understand the importance and the seriousness of what we need to do with you, by the same token, we can also refuse treatment to you. So I think that, you know, I understand a lot of people have a lot of questions and they've been mistreated, and, you know, they're looking for answers. But that's what the first appointment is for, is to answer your questions and to look at your files. And it's like, imagine, I don't know, calling a mechanic and saying, hey, this is the history of my car. These are the photographs of my car. These are the last mechanic's observations. I'd like to know more about how you can fix my car. It's like, dude, bring the car in for a revision. You wouldn't discuss that, right? So why should it be different? I don't see why it's different. Or calling up an architect and saying, ah, yeah, I'm thinking of building a house, a 10-room house, whatever, blah, 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 blah. How much do you think? The guy's like, that's not how it works. You know, you have to schedule a meeting and, or, I don't know, calling a graphic designer saying, how, you know, spending his time saying, send me some quotes on and tentative designs on a new logo. You have to pay for that. Why? Because it takes time to process the information. And as doctors, we like to be in the chair, in the treatment room. We like to be treating patients. You know, we're not paid to process that information. We're paid to heal you, to treat you. So that's what the first appointment is for. Diagnostics, discussion, treatment planning. And yes, of course, in coming up with an estimation of costs and I like to say the first appointment is where you turn a patient into a partner, not into a client, because clients can really just be stressful if something goes wrong. A partner wants to fix things together. So that's another little pearl of wisdom. Try and become a partner of your caregiver. You know, turn your patients, and if you're a caregiver, turn your patients into your partners, into your stakeholders of your business to understand the costs and the difficulties and challenges. And if you're a young physician or a young caregiver, don't oversell your things. You know, there's so many things that can go wrong. And if you've been to med school or dental school, you spend most of the time learning what can go wrong, not what can go right. So very important that you know, don't hide anything. And don't just because you want to make a dollar doesn't mean that you have to rush into things. So, you know, yeah, I guess that much like if you are wanting to build a house, you know, some people can just go and start building if you know how to do that. But that's not the way people go about it. You hire an architect and then you study the materials, you study, you know, the location. There's a lot of, then you have to go into the legal aspects of things. There's a lot of implications into building a house or any structure for that matter. And it's the same way. But once you've got an architectural plan and you've selected the materials and you've paid for it, then you can start building. And when you look at a building, you don't think about the builder. You think about the architect. And I think that it's really important, this first appointment. So, you know, when you're going to a dentist or a caregiver, respect the process of the first appointment. It truly is important. Also, you know, if you have personal, let's say, conditions about the way you want to live your life, or, you know, you've got these, I don't know, some people that are, I don't know, it's, if you've got anything that's weird, yeah, try and keep that at home, all right? Because you're coming to, I had one patient, well, it wasn't a patient, it was a potential client, booked an appointment, everything was fine, and then called the clinic and asked if we had Wi-Fi. And my front desk said, yeah, we have Wi-Fi, it's free, we'll give you the code. She was like, oh no, I'm allergic to Wi-Fi, and I'm not belittling EFM sensitivity, electromagnetic frequency sensitivity. It's a real thing. But some clinics do have a Faraday cage, which actually protects the clinic from radiation. However, she basically asked us to shut down the Wi-Fi for her trip to the clinic, and then was very offended when we said, "Look, we're not gonna see you." I mean, I'm not saying it's crazy. I'm just saying it's, and I'm actually grateful she asked us that, because who's to prevent her from coming here and then saying that something this affected her in this or that way, and me having some stress on my hands. So I guess if there's a bell curve of, you know, weirdness, we like to work in the middle of that bell curve, because some people really are quirky. Keep your eyes open for those things, because your doctor is a person too. You know, we're and I, even dentists, surgeons, usually very creative people. You know, they're very open, very engaging. I talk about myself. You know, I love life. I love music. I like to think of myself as a very good person, a very caring person. And again, I'm about to invade your personal space and actually interact with your biology, with your mechanics, with your tissue, your bone, your enamel. I mean, that's something that's for life, right? And I have to like you. I have to like you. I don't want to just do my job. I want to like you. So it's really important to be really nice. And one thing that's also, I run an international clinic. So I think it's also really cultural as well. Some cultures are a lot warmer than others. I'm not going to name names because I don't want to get any haters out there. But yeah, some cultures are some nationalities and then attached to age groups, attached to the demographics, attached to the social economic status, to the financials, to healthcare issues. I mean, the complexities, it's mind boggling. The only safe place is actually to stay at home. But we have a duty to protect our team. You know, I always tell my first patients, I said, you know what my job is? They say, yeah, you're a dentist. I said, no, my job is to protect my team, protect my staff, and protect the integrity of this clinic. And, you know, yes, we have services to sell. We have treatments to provide. And yes, we're a for-profit clinic, and but we're not obliged to give that care, to give that treatment or to provide these solutions to you if we think that there's going to be any stress coming out of that. And I think many years ago when I realized that, you know, if you focus on having a stress-free practice, you actually are not on profit, not only on profit. Of course, you have to be profitable. You have to, but it's how you make that is the big question. And I'll definitely be talking a lot about that in the future podcasts. So I think, you know, it's really, really important that we like you, you know, because we're people too. So be nice. You know, if you're going through your own personal issues, if you're having, just be open with your doctors. We're smart people. This is all we do. You know, your caregiver provider needs to know everything about you and be open. You know, I have some patients that come here. Let's say my patient's a 40-year-old woman and she's got an overbearing, overprotective, jealous husband, and that he answers for the patient, you know, won't leave the woman. And, you know, that's a red flag right there. You know, when there's somebody else answering for your patient that is an adult, a consenting adult without mental issues or health issues. It's like, why are you answering for this person? So those kind of things, warning signs, red flags, as we call them. And when your doctor's talking, asking way too many questions, that's also a no-no, or quoting things. Yeah, because I read this and this and this and that, and then you just said this and this and this and that. I had one patient that said that started quoting my website back to me because I'd mentioned something different. You know, medicine is constantly evolving. I don't update my website as fast as I update my personal information. I might have read a book or an article last night that has changed something. So, yeah, in a first appointment, she quoted something back. Oh, you said that, but on your website, you said that. I'm like, okay, that's it. Red flag. I'm not treating this patient. So, I think it's a really interesting topic, but there are ways that you can definitely get better healthcare, and that is book a first appointment, straightforward. Don't ask too many questions. Hopefully you can pay for that appointment. Make sure you get the most out of it. Listen, but share. Be very forthcoming with all of the information. And if you do have hidden mental health issues, tell your doctor. Tell them. Just say, listen, I suffer from mental health issues. I suffer from massive stress, anxiety. I'm bipolar. I'm schizophrenic. You know, hey, let's work about it. And by the way, if, you know, I can't open my mouth well, but I'm happy to pay for the extra time it takes. Because if you're a partner, you'd want to share the risk and share the difficulties with your caregiver, right? But if you start hiding all these issues to get a better price, that's not fair, because it's going to come out anyway, and that's going to create stress for the doctor, for your caregiver. And, you know, now you're engaged already in a physical relationship, physical, because this treatment already commenced. And the truth comes out halfway through, and that's just not cool. All right. So be as open as you can about all of the challenges you've had in the past, all the difficulties you have in the past. But at the same time, be warned that if I have a patient that comes to me for the first time and in that first appointment starts bad-mouthing other doctors, sometimes you probably have a point. You know, I see a lot of bad dentistry. Usually I don't get new patients that come from great dentists, because they stay with great dentists, right? They don't change unless they change countries. So I get a lot of patients that have come from other countries and they've got great dentistry, and I'm really proud of that. But on the same token, I get a lot of new patients that have bad dentistry, and they've got a lot of complaints, and those complaints are valid. But I usually always say in a very first appointment that I don't want to know the name of your dentist. It's actually a rule I've had for 20 years. Because I start with the x-ray, and if I see that there's something bad, I will start by saying, don't tell me the name of your dentist. If you do, I might refuse treatment, because what if it's somebody I know and care about? I don't want to get involved in that. I also don't want to get involved in any legal disputes or anything like that. It's just, look, leave your baggage at the door. You know that expression, your emotional baggage? Just leave it at the door. Don't bring it into this first appointment. And once you've got through the challenges of your diagnostic and treatment planning, then let's slowly discuss your emotional baggage. Especially if there's a lot of care to be given. You know, if you've got a treatment that's going to take 6 months, 7 months, like, you know, having to take out all your teeth and clean the bone and place implants, and there's cosmetics involved and all of that. I mean, that's a lot of work. That's my area of expertise, complex oral rehabilitation. You know, the last thing you want is, you know, somebody springing on you halfway through the treatment that, you know, they're highly mentally unstable. It has happened. And 22 years on the job, I'm narrowing the circumference of allowing those things into my practice. So we refuse a lot more care than we accept. We make a lot less revenue yearly than we could, but there's a lot less stress at the end of the day. So those that get in, and I don't mean to come out arrogant or, you know, I mean, a lot of people can't afford the luxury of choosing their patients. We're not a small family practice that does basic dentistry. You know, we're a very advanced dental clinic, and I only know my experience. So, but I have spoken with a lot of dentists around the world, and stress seems to be the common denominator. And we have a really advanced clinic here, yet the stress levels are very low. Why? Because of this philosophy of just, you know, we need to really make sure we can trust the patient. It's not just allowing the patient to trust the doctor. All right. It's a two-way street. You also have to deserve your care. You know, if a patient comes in and CEO of some company driving a $200,000 car with a $50,000 watch on his wrist and smokes two packs a day and is hurry up and he's 20 minutes late for his appointment and he's like, I'm the boss here kind of attitude. I mean, I don't care how famous or how rich that person is. Why would I care? Caregiver. Why would I care? Why would I care about somebody like that? I don't want to have dinner with somebody like that. I don't want to have that guy in my house. I don't want to have that guy around my children. Why would I want him in my practice that I've spent 22 years of my life building? You know, I be nice or go home. Be nice or go home. So I think that's the message. You know, if you want to get better service and better treatment and even better costs, make sure you are as easy as possible on your caregiver, on your care provider. Be nice. If you've had a bad ride, you know, your new caregiver isn't responsible for that. If you've had bad treatments, your new caregiver isn't responsible for that. If you've been robbed, cheated, duped, he is not responsible. We are not responsible for what happened in the past. You know, we'll try and work through it together. You know, and if you have challenges as a human being that require more interventions, more chair time, more materials, more risk, then you have to be prepared to pay for that. You know, it's It's not, you know, unless it's a pro bono case, I do a lot of pro bono dentistry, then, you know, I'm happy to take all of that on the chin. But, you know, like any partnership, going back to that architecture, you know, if you want to build a house on a cliff that is going to erode, then, and you, it absolutely has to be there, then that cliff has to be reinforced before any structure commences. And that reinforcement is going to add immensely to the cost. So foundations are very, very, very important. Make sure you build really good relationships with your healthcare provider. I've been very blessed over the years. I've got amazing patients. Some of them are the highest paid athletes in the world, with two pop stars and to cleaning ladies down the road. And I give everybody the same quality of care, the same quality of respect, the same level of care, because I love what I do. Everybody on my team loves what they do. You know, that's what we train to do. And there's so many complexities of a trip to the dentist, the cost, the challenges, the risk, the durability, the duration, guarantee, you know, it's that you as a patient, if you have all of these issues with your mental health or your physical health or your mechanics or, you know, where you live. A lot of people, you know, oh, I'd like to come to you, but I live in another country. It's like, why is that my problem? It's not my problem. So just think before you engage with a new clinic. Think, you know, write down a list of things that you have that are good. Write down a list of things that you have that are bad. Try and be as honest as you can about that. And remember, as caregivers, as doctors, I can't speak about all caregivers, but dentists and doctors are bound by a Hippocratic oath to do no harm. We are also bound by an ethical and deontological code of discretion. So you have to be, you know, you have to be as open as you can and share that as with your caregiver and hope for the best. And yes, there are a lot of unethical caregivers out there, a lot. But there's also, I think the majority are very good and very caring and very loving and really want the best for you. So we're allowing you into our homes, into our practices, into our businesses, into our small families, into our communities to give you care. And you have to deserve that. And if you have challenges, share those with us. Be nice, be kind. And you will be rewarded. So, thank you for listening in. This was How to Be a Better Patient and Get Better Service and Treatment. And now that I've finished, I think this was a lesson for both sides of the fence. And I hope that this created, at least in your own heads and hearts, a good discussion and something to think about. And I'll see you next time. This was Biting into Healthcare with me, Dr. Miguel Stanley.